from his kingdom, chaos comes!
The real reason Tychus stays in his suit. This is Core.
Hello, everybody. Scott Johnson here with Bo Schwartz, John Jagger. This is Core. Cho'Gall is annoying because he's in every game, and that's why he's annoying. Let's discuss this. Every time I get into a match, doesn't matter, Hero League, could be a quick match, doesn't matter. There's the two-headed idiot always in the game. Doesn't mean there's not fun to be had. Doesn't mean you can't kill him. Doesn't mean he's not counterable. Doesn't mean any of those things. It just means he's always there. He's ever present. John, is it ruining the game to have every match you play have a two-headed idiot?
No, it's making it better. I'll tell you why.
Okay.
For one, they were smart and they did the cool naming thing, and it's fun to figure out what these players' Cho'Gall name is going to be.
All right.
Which is, in case anybody hasn't noticed it yet, in order to create a name to go over the top of the character, it doesn't just list both players' names like it does for everybody else. It will take the first three letters of the name of the person playing Cho and the last four letters of the name of the person playing Gall and combine it into their ogre name.
Yep.
So, for example, when Gorath and me as Revendon play, we are called Gordon.
Half-Life 3 confirmed.
Yes, exactly.
Wow, that's a weird place for them to stick that little Easter egg to let us know that game was coming. Interesting.
Yeah, odd. An odd choice.
Yeah, very weird. They're old pals, Blizzard and Valve, so you never know. Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting. I ran into a guy in a random the other day named Pooh Bean. So it was Pooh, P-O-O, and then a comma or a apostrophe, and then Bean, B-E-A-N. And I don't remember what their real names were because at that point it didn't matter. It was glorious.
They will always be Pooh Bean.
They will always be Pooh Bean. And they were good. They were real good together. But there is a bit of a, I don't know, it's a little uneven how you may be presented with the skill levels of a Cho or a Gall in any one of those games. Bo, do you agree or disagree that they're eroding the fun factor just a little tiny bit? It's not like you can't still have a good time, but you just, the sight of them makes you go, ugh, again with the Cho'Gall. It's like everyone wants to play it. The viral thing means everyone's trying to earn gold and pass this thing around and earn the character itself. Is it too much, or am I making too much of it?
Well, okay. So Cho'Gall was released like Tuesday of last week. Yeah. So maybe it's been not even a week yet.
Yeah.
And we went from excited, excited, excited to don't pick Cho'Gall. Oh, Cho'Gall again. And I think the reason is maybe he's not winning a lot of games.
This is what I wanted to get down to, because you'd shared a percentage with us in our last match that surprised me a little bit. What's his current win rate?
So I'm like, you know, Hutzlogs is a nice community-oriented service that provides stats on win rates voluntarily provided by players. So not from Blizzard, not 100% accurate, but it gives us an idea. And Cho'Gall right now is sitting at in the 20 to 25% rate range on win rates, which is unprecedented, I think, for a hero. Mind you, this is counting both heroes together, but still, I don't think that makes a difference.
Well, that was my question. So it counts two losses every time?
Well, I think it would be one loss.
Okay.
It's just they are always you can't ever play a Cho without a Gall. So
well, right.
It doesn't matter. So I mean, 25% of the time one out of four games you can expect to win with the Cho'Gall. Like every hero, maybe if you're the exception, you have a good twosome that's really wicked with it, then that's another thing. And I would argue you need a good fivesome because the other three players on your team have to be on the program too. Maybe your win rate is there, but I think just for people jumping in and it's doing that effect of like, yeah, there's two heads and they're dissonant. They're not on the same page.
It does seem to negate or necessitate a secondary tank in almost every case. I've never had a game where I won where Cho was our sole warrior.
Sure. I mean, I think in draft, it's a bit different because maybe you can stack the deck that way. In quick match, it's just anything goes. Mm. So you never know what's going to happen there.
Yeah, good point.
So it's like, it's good for the game. This hero is amazing. It's awesome that they did this. I'm very happy with it. The Cho'Gall, like Abathur and Murky before, kind of trolly characters. You know, the Cho'Gall experience needs to be a winning one just as much as every other hero if this is going to be a legitimate hero. So I'm sure they're going to look at this and make adjustments.
I'm just having flashbacks. John and I were at BlizzCon this year and last year. And if you remember last year, they announced the Lost Vikings and the crowd lost its mind. Completely freaked out and cheered and yelled and were so excited about this. And then it became the Bane. And nobody wanted to have it on a team, and everyone complained when they'd see it, and you rarely saw it in any pro play or whatever. I'm not saying Cho'Gall's bad at all. I'm having a blast when I play him. I just feel like deja vu a little bit. Everyone lost their minds when they announced it at BlizzCon, and now you're starting to see that thing settle in, where once in a while a comment from one of your random teammates will be, Cho'Gall's the worst mistake Blizzard ever made. And things like that, which, you know, perception is whatever it is. I don't necessarily agree with that sentiment, but I just get the feeling that we're heading into that Lost Vikings territory where the gimmick of the character has painted it in a corner a little bit and made it a little unsavory at this point.
It could be, but I think I think the game needs characters like that. You know, you can't have every character that comes out be Johanna, you know, a solid tank for any given situation. She's a good choice. You know, sometimes you have to have those characters that are a little more niche or a little bit just fun to play. And you look at a character like Murky, who's gone through, you know, revisions where there was a time where he was considered the worst character in the game. And what are you doing if you pick Murky? And then all of a sudden he was OP and needed to be nerfed. And then all of a sudden he was nerfed too far and he was terrible again. And now all of a sudden, you know, he's getting the biggest applause out of the entire tournament when he gets picked and winning games for his team when he was. Mm. You know, there are characters in the game that work really well with certain comps and certain situations and with certain players behind the wheel. And I certainly had my troubles with Cho'Gall at first. But Bo and I played some Cho'Gall matches, like I would say our last two where I was playing Gall and he was playing Cho. We dominated.
Yeah, you guys are really good together with him.
We did really, really well. But likewise, then yesterday we played a couple of games and we didn't pick Cho'Gall. Our team was without him and we went up against people playing Cho'Gall and I loved him even more because he's so easy to beat.
Yeah, we just just decimated him.
Yeah, PSA for all you people out there, now's a good time to play characters like Rainer and take the giant killer trait.
Yeah.
And just win, win, win. The whole live long day.
Yeah, I do that with Vala's the other one with Giant Killer, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of them, but the range DPS.
Sure, and they do incredible amounts of damage to him, and he heals slower than everyone else. The one funny thing I thought though is we were in that 5-man comp that had no Cho'Gall in it. The other team did, and Bo fired off a Kel'Thas. What was it?
Pyroblast.
And that thing didn't do anything to him. it was like a little
gave
poof.
Him a sore cheek.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. So anyway, Cho'Gall, week two begins. We'll see how things shake out. I mean, that's the thing is I came into this discussion in my head going, you know, oh man, it seems gimmicky now. But then you just reminded me it's only been not even a week. Been a week and 2 days, or it'll be a week Tuesday, I guess, or it's under two days.
Yeah, but it's funny how quickly the community soured, because when it first came out, you know, there's always somebody in draft or somebody in my friends list willing to like party up and do Cho'Gall. I spread the love around that virus that went around. I gave it to a whole bunch of people in the Frog Pants channel. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was really, it was very fun community oriented event. It's a very fun friendship making thing. But as like I play, you know, pretty much daily, right? And I don't know that this is the kind of hero I want to actually play. That there's something to be said about having that autonomy. Mm-hmm. I personally don't like playing Gaul that much.
Mm. See, I'm the opposite. I'm the flip. I prefer Gaul in that scenario.
And Gall's my favorite of the two.
If I have to pick two, I'd rather be Cho because I have agency on the field.
Yeah.
And I find playing Gall is way too passive and boring. Gall doesn't auto attack, and his cooldowns, they're quick, but they're not. I don't find them very fun. I'd rather have my own hero running around the battlefield. Mm-hmm. I think, and this is just my own sort of play experience with it, but even though I prefer Cho and think Cho is more fun, I don't find he's not that much fun compared to other heroes. I think for me, like underpowered, overpowered, that's a separate conversation. I think he might be a bit gimmicky, and I might have lost interest in playing him sort of going forward, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I'm
not. And maybe that's okay. Maybe that's just fine. But
like if one of you said, hey, we need to play him, like John, if you said, let's play him, and but we both wanted to be Gall, I would probably be less inclined to want to play just because.
Well, why don't just be Johanna and Jaina?
Yeah.
And we can, you can shoot ranged and we can have a tanky guy.
And I guess that's the point, right? We've got this, we have these other characters. It doesn't mean they have to be the most popular thing ever. You can have somebody who really jives for whatever reason really gels with like the Lost Vikings. Well, now he's got his character. And he may be one of a tiny percentage of players who really dig on that weird threesome pick. But it's there for him. So I'm not negative on them doing this at all. Like keep bringing out the weird, right? Because what that means is you're going to have a broader base of players who find their niche because they're niche characters, whether, you know, people like it or not. Now they may find some crazy meta with him and go, oh my gosh, now like high level play matches are being won by Cho Gall because we figured out whatever. Fine. Let's let that happen organically. But even if it doesn't, I like that people have the option to play something weird if they want to.
So yeah,
it's fine.
He's a flavor slam dunk. His VO super awesome.
yeah, stuff's really good. Did you?
I think you nailed it though. Really, is that not everybody has to like every single hero? You know, Bo will tell you when he picks Lost Vikings, he starts yelling the phrases that they say and all of that. And
bring me to the food.
Yeah, that like that, and I immediately just go to a dark place in the corner of my heart.
Yeah.
Not every hero is for everybody. And I think that's fine. I think that's why you want a diverse cast of heroes. Yeah. I think if Blizzard's goal was to make everybody like every hero they put out, I don't know. It's not a bad goal, but I don't know that that's necessarily great for the game either.
John, was it you that ran into the game where Cho Gall had, was also being hatted by Abathur the entire game? So basically a three-man comp.
Oh, no, I didn't see that.
Somebody was telling me about this.
I played that in Hero League, actually.
Maybe it was you who told us. Yeah,
this was the we were the team. My Hero League draft was so mad. We had Abathur, Brightwing, Raynor, and Cho Gall, and it was a first pick Abathur, and we second and third pick Cho Gall, and the Abathur was furious. He's like, I took Abathur. Why? We have three bodies on the battlefield. You know what? We won that game.
Wow, really?
Yeah, we fought hard. I'm a damn good Cho. I'm going to tell you that right now. I'm aggro as, you know, I'm super aggro. Yeah. So you better, like, bring it when I play Cho Gall. But it's still hard going. It wasn't an easily won game, but, you know, I had a hat on me. Oh, we had a Brightwing heel. Like, you know, I never died.
Who else was left? Who were the actual physical bodies outside of Cho Gall?
It was Raynor, Brightwing, and Cho Gall.
And that's it, four. Right?
Yeah, that's it.
Oh my god!
We were just rolling around, clinging to dear life.
That's crazy. Yeah, and you guys won that match.
So glad we had the Raynor for the damage, because otherwise, you know.
Yeah. What was the match? What was the battleground? And,
I think it was Garden of Terror.
Okay.
But also to note too, I consistently see Gall topping out hero damage. So for as like sour as I might be on like, oh, it's boring playing Gall, he puts out. I find it's been pretty consistent with a lot of players I've seen high amounts of damage as Gall.
Mm. Well, all right. Those are our impressions. Still a threat, that Cho Gall. Still equal parts frustrating and kind of innovative.
I'm ready.
Yeah.
I'm not ready.
What else? Scaling changes. Let's talk about those for a second. It's kind of hard to tell what the immediate impact is, except for a few things I noticed. Thrall is really good right now. Which wasn't true before. He was pretty average before. I mean, never in my heart. He's always been great in my heart. But suddenly Thrall is back in the fray in a major way. What other characters seem to be the most effective?
For affected. Me, it was early game Carl Jim, or Karazim, as he's correctly named.
Yeah.
but the monk is, you know, he punches a bit harder. And he also got a little boost to his damage trait, which, you know, we played one of the games we played last night, John. You went damage build with him, and you had a great time.
That looked fun.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun. And also, I, you know, taking seven-sided strike when you know you're going to face a Cho'Gall is kind of fun, too, because they will run up to you and be like, oh, look, it's a monk all by himself, all squishy. And then next thing you know, you hit him with all seven-sided strike, and they're down to almost no health left and don't know what to do about it.
Well, it's because it's a percentage thing with seven-sided, not a total points reduction on their health, right? Isn't that how it works? Yeah. So if he's the only one in your radius, you do to him what you do to anyone. You take him down to whatever that percentage is, and then he's just the biggest sitting duck ever. It's pretty fun to watch that. The hard part is getting him or getting everyone else so they're not there and it's only him there, because then you're, you know, only going for the lowest or the highest health character. And if, you know, if you've got all five in the fray, you're really not doing much to anyone.
Yeah, it's not a good strategy for Cho'Gall, but it's fun to have when Cho'Gall's around.
Sure. With the flattening of the leveling, your auto attacks, I think in the early game, do a lot more damage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he definitely feels like it. There were people in the early game taking the damage trait for the monk that I would just, you know, get in and just punch him. I wasn't very afraid of him. Even Cho'Gall, you know, we had a match where you were on KT and I was on the monk, and Cho'Gall would come stomping up to us, and I'd just teleport right into his face and, you know, hit him as much as possible. And you would stun him a little bit, and he'd have to retreat and go use the fountain right away, because we would put out so much damage in such a short amount of time.
Well, Bo, from a mathematical perspective, and for those who are just not in the know who are listening to the show, what in effect is the scaling change? What is the flattening of the leveling? Is there an easy way to sort of explain that?
Yeah, basically there was a certain percentage difference in power for levels. So you'd often, you know, we talked about this on the show where I'm like, who cares if you're down three levels? Go fight. The only one that really matters is level 10.
Right.
So I think on one of the BlizzCon panels, they said this was pretty unintuitive for players to like not fight because they had to level up.
Mm-hmm.
So what they did was they wanted to make the power difference between levels smaller. I think it's 4 or 8%. I'm not 100% sure on the number, but what they did was they took all that extra differential and put it into your base stat. So like maybe you used to start the game with 800 hit points. Now you're going to start with like 2000 and the scaling up is going to be smaller, meaning it's not an excuse to be behind levels to not fight anymore. Yes, you'll have a talent disadvantage, but like the game is meant to be a fighting game, and a lot of arguments break out in chat about like, no, don't fight, we're too low. So that's like in the broad strokes, that's what you need to understand. I think a lot of people won't even know this change took place and might not feel it. I played two games of KT. It's like the game hasn't changed at all.
Yeah.
Like, so put W on this guy, put W on this guy, you know. So,
well, John, could you tell the difference with the monk? Like, was there an immediate change in early game that you were like, oh yeah, look at him taking stuff down way quicker than before?
Well, the problem I ran into with the monk is I was taking different talents than what I took before. So it was hard for me to parse, okay, how much of this is scaling changes versus how much of this is me taking the damage trait over the healing trait, which is what I typically took.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the characters that I played already kind of operated on a more level curve. They didn't have the big peaks and valleys. I'd say the character that I feel like I noticed it the most on was Zagara. I haven't played Zagara in a really long time, and I got back into her a little bit this weekend and did really, really well and really enjoyed my time with Zagara. I don't know how she was impacted by the change. I didn't look it up or anything like that, but I know that it felt really good. And I feel like all of our matches have felt really good. We've had some that were stomps, but when we heard about the scaling changes, I kind of said to everybody, I have a feeling this is going to do good things for the people we typically play with, because we tend to be very good in the late game. And the goal of the scaling changes was to get the game to play a little more evenly throughout the entire match, as opposed to just it plays this way during the early part and then ramps up at the end. And I think we've seen that because we've had some really crazy strong matches lately, which could be bad matchmaking. But yeah, I think
we also weren't sure that our good matches this weekend were the result of people playing Overwatch.
Yeah, there was a feeling. I mean, that's a really good question. And part of the problem is Blizzard's created an environment where it's impossible for us to tell. They have better data, so they can maybe parse it. But we look at this and go, oh, well, this week's jacked up, or we're doing better because Cho'Gall sucks and he's on every other team. Well, maybe it's got nothing to do with it, and it's all about the flattening or the scaling, and we're just benefiting from it as a team for whatever reason. But then it's hard to say, well, but maybe all of our normal competitions are shooting each other in Overwatch over this weekend because it's that big open beta weekend or closed beta weekend, and maybe not. I mean, that Blizzard's giving us all these other things to worry about and think about when really it could just be their math working. And their new algorithms working, you know?
I suppose when I think about it, there still is an MMR thing. So we probably got matched up with people that are similar to us in some way.
Yeah.
To our team. But yeah. The other change too was part of the scaling change is longer death timers.
Yeah.
In the early levels. Like, I don't know where the cutoff is, maybe before level 11 or something. But did you guys feel like, well, we didn't die that much, right?
No, I didn't die at all last night in either the three. What did we play? Three games? Two, whatever it was. I didn't die in any of them, but I don't know that it's, I mean, I've died in games since the patch, and I don't know that I've noticed it that big of a deal. It never felt like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm waiting an extra 3 seconds or whatever it is.
I feel like Cursed Hollow, I've seen, you know, one of those crazy tribute fights break out since this, but instead of going for what seemed like an eternity, it maybe went through a cycle of one, you know, everybody died and came back before it, you know, somebody finally got it. Like, that's moved a lot quicker.
That's a good point. Sometimes that thing stalemates like crazy, especially that first or second one. Yeah. And those do seem like they're taking care of themselves better. And that's a whole nother thing that's, out, you know, that's a part of this that we don't think about very often. All these changes are one thing in a vacuum with, say, one map, you know, if you're a regular MOBA. But when you're talking about a rotation of 8 to 10 maps, and they all have their own, they all have their own organic reaction to timing. That must be real hard to figure that out, you know, because what it means for extra time on death timers for Cursed Hollow is a very different argument than death timers for, say, oh, I don't know, it's another one.
Sky Temple,
yeah. Like, very different. You've got different distances to travel. You have different mechanics that behave differently based on when people can get there and get back. Like Shrine scares the hell out of me to know that I have any additional seconds of downtime because we're just going to lose that shrine. So it feels more urgent there. That's fascinating to watch them balance that. And they've done a pretty good job. So my feeling is that at the end of all this, not the end of all this, but at some point, I'm just trusting in that these changes are making an impact. And just because they're a little hard to tell where the source of it is for us, like why we're winning more or why the games go better or why they're better at late game, it's probably because it's working as intended and also happening kind of transparently so that we're not having to worry about big, ugly changes that are jacking up our play. And that's good. That's a good balance for them to hit. Been very happy with it.
I think that's an interesting point you make about the death timers affecting different maps. I like it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and they do, right? Like everything about those maps, like they have to approach every map and go, I mean, I wonder which one informs the other more. I'm guessing that the structure, the overall structure of the game and the way the characters work and everything that's put into place on timing and everything else helps inform how the map is made more than a map determining the course of the game, obviously, because then once you start doing that, well, then the other maps are affected. So when they approach something like Towers of Doom, they have to say, all right, well, we have a certain, you know, we live within an ecosystem of rules, and these rules have to be adhered to. Justice has to be served to these rules. So the map needs to fit creatively within those rules. It can maybe bend one, but where it bends one, it has to give leeway for another. That must be a huge part of what they have to deal with. I mean, they're obviously pros and know what they're doing and have a big team that does this sort of thing and have great minds on it, but
I'm sure the answers aren't easy each time. That's why we have a teleporter.
Exactly. Yeah, we never. Exactly. But that's what they're good at. They creatively approach these things and then come up with, instead of saying, well, that isn't going to work, they'll figure out a way to make it work. And if it doesn't work at all, they'll just get rid of it. But I have full trust that this is all going as planned and that we're benefiting as players. So I think that's all that matters. Hey, there's a big sale coming up. You want a stim pack? You want a stim pack for 360 days? Well, you're going to get it. We don't know what that's going to cost yet, though. But a 360
deeply discounted.
Yeah. Why the missing 5 days? Do you think? Why not just a full year? What do you think they're doing?
I don't know.
That?
This is like reported from on sites. I guess that was a quote from Blizzard, so it is 360. That seems weird. Why not make it a year?
Yeah.
They're not friends with close friends with Microsoft that they promote Xbox. Like, is it Xbox 3? It's not even the current generation. No. I'm like a generation behind here.
No.
So yeah, it makes it. Unless something's yet to be revealed, it makes no sense.
Hey, the human body can only take 360 days of stim pack.
Or maybe if you're conspiratorial, this is the first sign that we're changing the clock here in the world. We're going to switch to like a 36-hour day, but each hour is only 22 minutes. It'll be some crazy change like that. Illuminati, chemtrails, all that stuff.
That's incredibly plausible reasoning.
Yeah.
I'm behind you.
Well,
I think Bo's excited because he already lives the 36-hour day.
Yeah. Oh, in Canada, they've already got this figured out.
Yeah.
And we'll tell you why he lives a 36-hour day a little bit later.
Ooh.
But Bo has been playing a lot of Overwatch, is all I'm saying.
I'm probably going to buy that stim pack.
Are you really? Well, let's say it comes out, John. And okay, so if we just do some basic math, right now it costs you $10 for, what is it, 3 months?
For a month.
Or a month, I'm sorry. I wish it was 3 months. Sorry, not 90 days. $10 for a month. So let's say they discount that to like, oh, I don't know, let's say $6 per month. There's no way they'll go that low. But let's just say they do for argument's sake. That's for 10 months, that's 60. What is that for 12? Add another
72.
72. So you get $72 per year.
Oh, man.
That's
the price
a lot.
Of a AAA title for some gold.
That's
take
lot,
a hike during 360.
Yeah, but if I'm going to do it anyway is the problem. Like, yeah, that's the thing
you're not
that you have
do
to
it.
Ask yourself.
We did it. We looked at an analysis last show, and we all
that
agreed
did,
that
and
it
you
was
know
not,
what? That was the day my stim pack ended, and I bought another one.
You know what? It's going to feel bad. I had stim pack for a few months. It definitely feels bad transitioning to low amounts of gold. But I've been without for a while, and now I just don't care.
I don't either.
This is getting dark. It sounds like we're talking about actual drugs.
I know it does.
It like, no, does. No. This is a positive story because, like, I've been without it for a few months. And, oh, no, it does sound like drugs.
Hi, I'm Bo Schwartz, and I'm a stimaholic. Hi, Bo. Yeah.
No, seriously, though, like gold in video games doesn't matter. That stim doesn't matter.
But it's support, I like it for the experience. Because
support Blizzard. Do it to if you like with your stated intent to be like, I just want to throw money at them because I want them to keep making this game. Great. Do that. But yeah. It's not a great buy, man.
I think it's a money.
Okay, here's the problem. I know we talk a lot about stim packs on this show.
Yeah.
And maybe this will be the end of it, but I don't know. But here's the problem. The problem is my favorite thing in that game is leveling up heroes. It's my favorite part of the game right now.
Yeah.
And already with the stim pack, the speed with which that runs is agonizing at times to where it gets frustrating for me. If I slow that down even more, I'm making my favorite part of the game a source of frustration. And not that I think I'm going to like drop heroes without a stim pack or anything, but I don't know if I want to lose that, which is why I keep re-upping on the stim pack.
I totally get it. I totally get it. You're not, I don't think you're alone. I think a lot of players would say that exact same thing. A big part of the game for me is the progression. And part of my biggest problem with the game is the progression seems to almost virtually put the brakes on it at 9. And getting anywhere past level 9 feels like, you know, hand-picking sunflower seeds. It's just a very long process. But I don't feel like the stim is so much more. Well, like you said, John, you said it, what is it, last week or the week before, when they did that bonus XP stuff on top of everything. So you had friend bonus. If you had a stim pack, great, you had that. And then you had that bonus stuff they were running for that period of time. That felt right.
Yeah, like, that felt really good. That felt perfect. I was so hoping they'd pull a Diablo and just say, hey, people really like this. We're going to keep it around.
Yeah, that would have been good.
Well, the way to ensure that doesn't happen is to buy their stim pack. They're like, well, people like spending money on this. Why would we change
That's
it?
That's a good point. So, if it becomes a source, if it becomes a significant source of their revenue on this game, they're not going to change it. it'll...
We'll see. Yeah. We'll see what deeply discounted means.
Also, we'll see how deep I go down this rabbit hole. You might find me with a picket outside of Blizzard.
Yeah.
What if it was $50?
For a year?
No.
For a year.
Not worth for me.
If it was 30 a year, I'd consider it. I'd think about it at 30. More than that, okay. I just feel like it's not deeply discounted enough. And again, that's an interesting definition. I don't know what theirs is going to be.
For me, it's got to be like 10 or 20 bucks tops.
Whoa.
There's no way it'll be 10.
That's a pretty deep discount.
But it's just not worth it. I'm really sour. I advocate against Stimpak purchasing.
Yeah.
I'm against.
He's like, in the Stimpak Dare program.
Buy it to support the game. But hold on. Just, you know what? You know how you can support the game? Buy skins and buy heroes.
What did you call it? Impact purchasing? Is that how you called it?
Did I call it that?
Yeah, I think you just did. I like that, if that's what you did. Or did you not mean to do that?
I didn't mean to do that.
You said, I'm against impact purchasing.
Oh, I'm against Stimpak. It was Stimpak.
I thought you said impact, and that's actually kind of a cool. Think about it. Buying things that impact the rate at which you earn, that you achieve things in a video game. That sounds like impact purchasing is actually a pretty apt way to put it.
Yeah. It is impactful. Like, that might be a good corporate speak thing that I just coined.
Yeah, I'm saying we ought to write this date down and remember this, because this is when
contact
we first
heroesforyou.com for send your royalties to us. You start using that in your corporate meetings.
Yeah,
I think the moralis of this story is I'm going to try and wean myself off.
Nice. That is always the moralis of the story. I don't miss it that much, to be honest. I'm having as much fun as I've ever had. I feel like I have enough characters where I want them to be, and kind of once I get all their colors and all of their, their mount color stuff unlocked, after that, I kind of forget. I don't love that I kind of forget it, because I really like that progression, but I kind of maybe even actively try to forget the fact that, you know, Meriden's not 11 yet or whatever.
Talk about progression with these guys. It's just EPing progression. Like, you're not actually gaining access to new abilities or anything. Like, you get some gold, but really, if you think about what you're spending the time doing, it has zero impact on the gameplay. So it's kind of like, and I love that stuff too. I'm not against it. I just think paying to speed it up and to get the little bit more that you get is just not, I don't know. I feel bad about it, but we're going to have to change the name of the show to Stimpak if we keep talking about
Stimpak of the Storm. Okay.
Stimpak, Heroes of the Storm show.
I like
show.
It. It's so perfect. Also,
my final thoughts are boo.
Yeah, boo. Second chance bundles are coming back, so I can finally buy that Jaina Christmas outfit. So I'm looking forward to that. That's coming back.
Yeah.
I do want to kind of finish out her wardrobe and get everything she owns. I don't know why. It's like my own. It's like my own personal digital Barbie doll going on over there. But just a little creepy.
It's great though. It's great. I love it.
Yeah, that stuff's great. And the best part is everything for the next 2 weeks, which starts on what day does it start? On Black Friday?
Tuesday.
Oh, Tuesday. Okay. Starting Tuesday, going for two straight weeks, everything in the store is 50% off. That's heroes. That's skins. That's mounts. I don't think this is compound discount, so I don't think there's like, here's already, you know, Meriden for 50% off, and now he's at an additional 50% off. I don't think it works that way. I could be wrong, but I doubt it. One way or the other, everything you want, if you ever wanted it, for example, you know, all the heroes are, what, 10 bucks right now? They'll all be 5. That's pretty awesome, actually. So I think I'll end up picking up a bunch of stuff. I don't know how I'll do on bundles and things, but there's a few individual heroes that are totally worth $5 to me, and I would like to finally get a hold of. Like, Abathur's just never been in my repertoire, partly because my desire to play him has never equaled $10, but it'll equal 5, you know? So
I'm very happy for the people who are going to take advantage of this sale.
Yeah, you've already bought all these things.
Yeah, Steam has this weird effect on me, and if this is something they're going to do annually, it's going to have the same thing, which is I bought Bioshock Infinite at full price. Didn't play. I haven't played it yet.
Wow.
And it's been on sale for like $5 how many times now, or $10?
Yeah.
Like, why did I buy it day and date?
Yeah.
So I on Steam now, I wait to buy things. And so now I'm going to look at this and say, well, geez, these skins I like are all going to be 50% off next year. I can probably wait till then. I'm a longtime player. Mm-hmm. But that kind of sucks too. I feel it devalues purchases a little bit. This is a little too excessive.
Well, what if they gave... All right, fair enough. That's a fair point. But what if this deal... I know they're not doing this, but what if they just gave you a load of gold because they knew that you'd already bought most of these things and wanted to sort of equivalate that? You know, that's not a word, but give you the equivalent of what you would have lost in gold or something like that.
I you could say that for everything that changes, and like I don't think they're going to set up that precedent ever because that also is bad. I just feel like they should deeply discount the new player bundle or target specific heroes. Like, I'm not against them giving sales because they're going to do that. It's just the entire store is 50% off.
What do you think, John? Well, is it like an everything must go kind of thing? Is that how it's feeling to people?
I think this is cool. I think this is an awesome thing. Like, I'm in the business of let's make heroes grow. And a great way to make heroes grow is to give people easier access to a lot of it. And yeah, I bought all the heroes before we got to this point. It's one of the things that I'm happiest about in the game is that when a new hero comes out, it's a decision on that one hero. I don't have to think about all the other heroes I don't have yet. And I don't feel like my, you know, purchases have been devalued because had I waited a little bit longer, I would have gotten a better discount. I feel like that's, you know, that's the price I paid for not being willing to wait. But we also didn't know. And we also don't know what they're going to do next year. Next year, it could be we're putting out a special bundle for this time of year. And that's the only thing that's going to be on sale. And it's not going to be everything. I just feel like you have to make the purchases that you feel good about. And, you know, if this is your time and you're finally going to say, oh, you know what, this is a really good way to... I think $10 is too much for a hero, but I'm willing to spend $5. I think that just makes more people interested in the heroes that they're playing and maybe finding that hero that clicks with them. I mean, we constantly talk about how this game was kind of fun, and then you find that hero that just clicks with you in the right way, and all of a sudden that's when you're all in.
Yep.
This might give somebody a chance to do that where they otherwise might not have been able to. And yeah. I think that's a good thing for the game. I don't think there's anything bad about that.
I think that's probably a good thing too.
Yeah,
I
agree with you.
The only problem is people like Bo have spent, I don't know, untold hundreds on this thing. And it kind of puts them out there a little bit. But that's true of Steam or anything else like you mentioned. Here's the only worry I would have is that if it sets a precedence, or not a precedence, but people see this deal and go, oh, well, they must be really desperate for players because they got to reduce everything by 50%. They must really be hard up. Oh, sorry, guys. LOL. We're playing League of Legends. Like, that kind of thing is not great PR for a game that's trying to be the new, you know, trying to be the new hotness in the MOBA space. I don't know how much of that is the case, but, you know, maybe 50% is the right number. I don't know.
It just strikes me as aggressive, like aggressive discounting. But Black, you know, StarCraft goes on steep sale too every year on Black Friday, and I think the latest WoW X-Pack always does. So, I mean, it's not anything new for Blizzard. I feel like this is probably in line with what they do year over year, and it's fine. I agree with everything John said about it. It's going to be in the back of my mind when I make purchases in the future. Like, do I really want this now, or can I wait? Because if I wait, I should wait.
Blizzard should be desperate for players.
Yeah,
absolutely. If you're making a video game and you're not desperate to bring in as many people to like and buy your product, then you're not doing something right. And I get what you're saying with it creates a perception of desperation that might not be the reality. But I don't think there's any shame in saying, yeah, we think we have the best MOBA on the market. We think it's the most fun to play. We think it's accessible to people who don't typically like this game. And we think it's fun for people who do play other MOBAs and they'll like this better. So yeah, why not give you a discount and come try it and play it and find out for yourself? Yeah. I think they absolutely should do that.
That's a good point. It's a tactic, you know, it's a loss leader tactic. It's like, we need to get it out into more hands because we believe in this. So we're going to take a hit for a couple of weeks and build it around a heavily discounted part of the month for a lot of business industries and businesses. And here it is like that. It's a totally valid thing to do. I'm oversensitive to how Heroes is perceived. It's just so easy for League of Legends players, Dota players to see this thing and go, yeah, way to come, way late, Blizzard. You guys are like third place and it took you forever. What's going, you know, like there's that stupid attitude, which I usually just don't even like to give any credence to. The game is what it is, and it's great for what it is. But I just hate that there's that perception, and I don't want them to to make that any worse. But maybe they're, you know, if you never do that, I guess you never say anything. So I'd rather them discount this than be afraid to discount this, if that makes any sense.
Truer words were never spoken.
Well, good. How about these words? They took mines. The mines are gone. You can't go get skulls. You can't get a golem anymore. You can't go down in the mines and set off something dumb like the Hyperion ult or anything in there anymore. Why? Because it's out of the rotation for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. And another casualty of I don't know. But I don't know what it's a casualty of. All I know is that it's a travesty Garden of Terror didn't get taken out. Because mines is actually all right, in my opinion.
Well, let's all take a moment of silence for mines. Okay, that's over. I'm over that. See you later, mines.
Your golem's weaker than your enemy.
So, everybody who's saying I wish it was Garden Terror instead, yeah, you're not wrong. Mm. Those are the two maps that I don't like, so I'm not going to say that. You know, everybody's wrong for saying, oh, I wish it was Garden of Terror. Mm-hmm. I agree both of those could probably go, and I wouldn't shed a tear. But I'm certainly not shedding a tear over Haunted Mines. I think it was their worst map.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Was it also their first map? What was first map? Was it Garden of Terror and then this?
It was I don't know if we'll know because it was in the set of the maps.
Okay. I think Garden of Terror was actually like they had the initial launch maps and Garden of Terror was added after. I think it's not part of the initial set. Haunted Mines is like if I had to guess what one of the first ones was, Haunted Mines would definitely be it, one of them. I think I remember seeing them when they announced.
Well, I have a solution. We've talked about this on and off on the show. I have a solution for this problem because we're all excited to see the variation. It's so much more than traditional MOBAs get with their single map construct. So when they bring in more maps, it's very exciting and we get super pumped about it. Here's what I think they need to do, because now we're hitting that stage where we're like, yeah, the some of the newer, better ones are starting to make the older, crappier ones seem crappier. Even though they were fine for what they were at the time, but maybe they've seen their day. They're a little long in the tooth or whatever. Here's what they do. This is what I would do. They take Haunted Mines, for example, out of the rotation like they've done now. Rework that thing to bring it up to whatever spec you want it to be, meaning change some mechanics around, swap around some of the layouts, do whatever you think it needs to do to make Haunted Mines 2.0 really shine, then bring it back into the rotation at some point.
Like Haunted Mines 2, hauntier and minier.
Yeah, more minier, more hauntier than ever before. And you could add a third lane to that thing, or you could whatever it is that would improve the map based on what you've learned about map making. My point is that would be a way from keeping them from getting stale. I guess the problem is, as I say this, I hear all the voices that would complain that you changed it.
No, but this is great. Like, think of the one map in Dota and League of Legends, the Summoner's Rift or whatever it's called in Dota 2. Like, that map gets overhauled all the time. There's no reason why maps in our beloved game shouldn't see balance adjustments, graphic updates maybe. Like, that's totally, I'm totally on board with that.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. Treat it like a Disneyland ride. The animatronics in Haunted Mines are really bad and killing people. It's time to shut the ride down for a little bit.
Okay. Yeah.
No, that's make some changes.
That's a fine example.
Bring it back.
Last time I was at Disneyland, something was down. What was it? Space Mountain or something was down for not repairs, but some renovation, some other stuff. Well, yeah. Now it's just better than it was before. It's a little tighter.
They're turning it into Hyperspace Mountain for Star Wars right now.
Exactly. There's gonna be a Wookiee in it going when you're turning corners and stuff. It'll be fantastic. It's my worst Wookiee impression.
Confirmed. Wookiees in Haunted Mines too.
It's terrible. Anyway, it's gone. So if you enjoyed it, sorry. If you hated it, great. You're happy. And Towers of Doom, which would presumably take its place, is technically not launched yet, but it is still in testing. So if you are on the PTR, you can look at that now. What happened to Nova and her decoy?
So with the last patch, there were some actual stealth changes, undocumented changes, that is. Among them, notably for me, is that Nova's holo decoy will no longer, if I understand this correctly, will no longer dismount an enemy or interrupt objectives. Wait, maybe I've got this incorrect. I've got to go in and test this now. Because I read this as to mean enemies. So I often use holo decoy to, say, when someone's turning in a Blackheart's Bay, to shoot them, right?
Yeah, because they interrupt the turn-in.
Yeah, so if the holo decoys do this, then that's you know, if they stop doing that, then that's the whole, like, that really wrecks Nova. However, maybe Nova doesn't dismount now with Holo Decoy. Time to do some testing.
Yeah, we got
to
figure that out. But if it is the other way, if it's the first way, while that sounds great if you hate Nova and never play her, but it makes her pretty impotent if you are her. Because if you're getting shot by Holo Nova and you're not dismounting or you're not stopping the turn-in, all your brain has to do is go, fake Nova. You know, you don't
to... it's a complete giveaway that it's a Nova. So, you know what? Let's move on to the next item, and I'm going to test this out while we're here.
Ooh,
so
I love it. I love it.
Accurate information.
Real time.
My reputation as a Heroes of the Storm podcaster needs to remain intact, so I'm going to test it out live.
Let's talk about the hippy-dippy tree-hugging deer lady coming to the game next. Dustin Browder has confirmed via Twitter that Lunara.
Good lord. Lunara.
She is
so many ways to pronounce the same name.
The one that hops over you and drops a poop on you when she does it. Or what is it she does? She does things. She's got stuff. Right. She
throws a spear, which is basically poop.
Yeah. She's a deer lady. She's made out of like weeds and trees and bark.
She
and
hops
stuff.
Around. She doesn't walk normal.
I'm really fun. I tease mostly because I know Bo's looking forward to her. I'm actually kind of excited about her.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, I think she looks really interesting.
That 15K I have.
Yeah, you get hang on to that dough because you know you're gonna need. You're only gonna have a grand left.
That was a joke, and you didn't even.
Oh, I missed it. What was it? Give me again.
Oh, I got it.
I missed it. What was it?
Hang on to that dough.
Oh! I didn't even realize it, which is what you were also saying. All right. Anyway, but the point is, Dustin Browder says in this tweet. By the way, I watched people interrupt him so he couldn't eat on Thursday when we were at BlizzCon. It was the funniest thing. He could never take a bite of his food because people were coming up to him every 5 seconds. Anyway, he says, hi, Mr. Dustin. Who's next, Lunaria or Greymane? And Dustin Browder said, Lunara. Simple as that.
I love his tweets.
Yeah, they're so straightforward. It's just like, yeah, that's who it is. They're coming. He probably went to PR and said, guys, can I say now? Yeah, okay. Did a quick reply, wrote her name, hit send, put it in his pants, went and got a hot dog. Right?
Yeah. Maybe that's what happened. But maybe he, you know, didn't. And then PR was like, what did you do again, Dustin?
He's so excited, though. He's so stoked about everything. I've never seen a more animated Blizzard lead.
Like, no, he PR runs out onto the stage at BlizzCon. He's the only one who ran.
Yeah, he's out of his mind excited about everything he's working on all the time. And it's infectious, and I think he's great. And I hope he never stops working on this game. He is the soul of the game. You know, in so many ways, each of the teams have kind of that soul. Originally, I'd say Jeff Kaplan was kind of the soul of Warcraft in terms of its, you know, actual development. He's clearly the soul of Overwatch. Dustin, the soul of StarCraft. Now this, like that's a, I like that there's a superstar dude at the helm of each of these franchises for the most part. And that feels really good to me. Oh, and what's his name for Diablo? Can't think of his name all of a sudden.
No, but I know who you're talking about.
Travis Fortuna.
Jerry. He's not assisting Jabba the Hutt, he's real big into Diablo.
I can't think of his name. It's gonna bug me now. But anyway, he came in there and just now he's the Godfather. He's awesome. All right, so that's happening. Then we assume Greymane after that. Let's talk about Overwatch. Actually, was Greymane the only other one announced? That was it, right?
Yeah, that's Beyond Chagall. Tracer, who's going to be in when Overwatch comes out. Yeah,
Greymane and Tracer.
Oh,
and
that's right.
Gul'dan was name dropped.
Right.
We had a turn.
Right, and we also think because of those arcade games in Overwatch that probably Garrosh is.
Garrosh and Fighters of the Nexus, or whatever that game's called.
Yeah, Fighters of the Nexus 2. Anyway, because there's a Fighters of the Nexus 1 arcade game in that game also that is. I want to say it shows Tyrael and someone else,
versus someone. But you can also see the monk in there fighting somebody.
Yeah, which is pretty cool. I also want to play Siege Mode 3 and every arcade game in there I want, actually. And they're based on nothing. I mean, well, they're based on something, but they're not, you know, there's no game to play. Actually, hey, Blizzard, I got an idea for you. No more skirmish time waiting for a match to start. Just put us into your weird arcade world and let us play some of that stuff.
Their sprite work is really good.
Yeah, it's some of the best. I love it. It makes me wonder, dude. Just makes me wonder just a little bit. Is something being worked on? Is there a little something going on somewhere? I don't know. Remember they hired a bunch of remember the deal where they hired a bunch of retro game dudes not long ago, like a month ago, and nobody knows why. It's like some kind of classic Blizzard arcade focused something somethings, and nobody knows why they're there.
What if they made like a Marvel versus Street Fighter-esque fighting game with all these characters?
Oh my gosh. I'd play
it. And just really awesome, high quality sprites.
2D, super well animated. I'm in. I know. We'd all play
it. So before we move on to the next item, to bring it back to Nova.
Yeah, Nova Decoy.
So she still dismounts when she uses it. It will, the decoys will not, you can't use them on Blackheart's Bay or Cursed Hollow to cancel objectives anymore, or just to harass the opponents by dismounting, which is a huge nerf because the talent I pick that extends the range of Hollow Decoy by 100% was my favorite way to play her, and that's what I would do constantly. So it's pretty much just canceled my playstyle completely, and it's considered a bug fix, but it's undocumented in the notes. It just kind of happened. So I'm going to highlight it here and put it out there that this change sucks.
Yeah.
Nova's not like a super competitive character anyways in draft. So that's like, it's part of the utility of the decoy is that you can't tell if she's real or not. And these are some of the reasons that make her real. Like, yeah, I'm not a fan of this.
I agree. In fact, it's one of the small, well, I wouldn't call it small. It's one of the accomplishments of the game. It fools me on the regular. Like, still, to this day, a year into the game, with regular, you know, play almost daily, I still fall for decoys.
Let me ask a question real quick,
because I'm curious about this, because I hear this as a non-Nova player, and I think, great, now it's working how it should have worked all along.
But the
area that I'm curious about, and maybe you can test this too, or maybe you're not in a position to anymore... If you take the talent where her decoy actually does damage, I would think that will still do the interruption.
I didn't test it, but I was reading a thread on Reddit just now as well, and they're saying the 13 talent still works because it's damage.
Yes.
So what
that's
it is,
how it should work.
The hollow decoys don't deal damage, so they don't dismount or interrupt. Which I guess there's like, I guess there's a consistency issue. Maybe it makes sense somewhere in for the internal reasoning, but I'm still sad.
Especially it's a good thing
I take that talent all the time anyway.
Yeah, if your build was built around that is a blow, man. Like it's like finding out that what was it? I think it was when Thrall had his fury. What the hell is it called? His what's it called? Where he refreshes his
Frostwolf resilience.
That one, but one of the cooldowns was beefed up in the very first talent pick back in the day, and they moved it to like I don't know level 13 or something.
The Wind Fury stuff.
Yeah, some of the Wind Fury stuff. And I remember at the time being very disappointed. It just felt like a very different character from then on. I got around it, got used to it, and it was fine. But when these things get changed that drastically, it's hard when your play style is built around a certain talent. I mean, if I'd never picked that talent, that'd be one thing, and who cares? But
that's important that it shouldn't be undocumented, though.
Yeah.
I would say it should have been listed. But she's been on the warpath ever since the gathering power changes.
Yeah, that's true.
She's
been killing me just fine.
Yeah, I've been having a lot more difficulty with Nova lately since this patch. So I don't know. I'm curious how it will balance out. I'm curious to get your thoughts on it. If you play her again, you don't play her a ton anymore that I've seen.
I think Gathering Power is a bad talent on her, but a lot of people would disagree with me, and we're both probably right. But one day we'll have to do a deep dive on Nova because I have a lot of opinions.
Yeah, we should definitely talk about it. I mean, my introduction to you was your insane Nova play at the time.
I love playing Nova. Yeah. I love mind games. I think that's the biggest thing I like about Heroes is mind gaming people.
Yeah. I don't see you play her very often anymore, though. Do you think you just took a break? You guys needed to see other people for a while, and then you'll be back together?
Yeah, you just gotta eventually play other things. She's at level 18 for me. I didn't want to get her to 20, so I thought I'd go see other, you know. I like playing Kael Thas.
Yeah, he's all right. Nothing wrong with
like
Kael Thas.
I like playing characters that burn face, melt faces.
Yeah. Canadians say Kael Thas. We say Kael Thas, but it's fine. Oh. It's totally fine. It's not a problem. Let's talk about Overwatch for a second. In that, we would like to discuss who we think should join Tracer in the Nexus, at least after she hits the Nexus next June. I mean, presumably,
oh my God, that game.
We're gonna, yeah. So let's briefly. We should just mention this. The open beta weekend or open closed beta weekend, which is a little bit weird. They gave a whole bunch of weekend beta passes to a bunch of people. So Bo finally got his access. John and I already had ours, and we had a lot of friends who got in. And as a result, the last four or so days or whatever it's been, has been amazing time with everybody. Just incredible matches. Lots of fun with friends, bunch of streamed matches, bunch of games yesterday together, and then you stayed up till 7 in the morning playing. I don't know how you did that.
That's... Well, it's just always, because there's so much hype around this game, especially with open beta, there's always like five other people who are partying up, and the fun train just keeps on going. Mm-hmm. I haven't been this jazzed about this kind of first-person game in a really long time, and I was skeptical because, you know, the lack of aim down sights and the relatively small maps compared to other games. But I'm happy to report that game is fun and addictive as anything I've ever played. It's so much fun.
Yeah, it's really, really good.
It's just that Blizzard sense of polishing. It's what makes Heroes fun, too. When you play a hero and you realize that, like, you think you understand the game, but then this hero takes it and does something different and has counters and strengths. Like, it's weird to play a game that is a shooting game. It's all that's also a WWE wrestling game.
Yeah,
with like Reinhardt and like it's not like anything you've really played. I don't think it's got a lot of unique business going on.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, they should just be called a first person. Almost like I don't even know what the new genre could be. Like, they work so hard to call Heroes a brawler. I wish they'd work as hard to figure out what you would call this, because
it would
be
a MOBA. It would be a MOBA if it had more of the tropes of MOBA. Like, it's literally a brawler. Like, I feel like it's like Heroes in first person view in a way.
In a lot of ways, it is. Yeah. I mean, there's obviously a lot more. I don't know. The pace is like, there's a lot of things that are different, but I keep saying that this to you guys ad infinitum, and you're probably sick of me saying it, but I'll tell the listeners this because I really believe this. We played like 2.5 hours worth of Heroes, or excuse me, of Overwatch yesterday on a live stream, and then we switched over to playing Heroes. And I feel like those two games are very compatible. And the irony is they don't play mechanically the same at all. They don't, you know, one's a very different perspective than the other, different kind of match times. Like, all that stuff's very different. But for some reason, when I go from playing a bunch of Overwatch to roll into playing Heroes, rather than feeling a little off like, oh, I just played Diablo and now I'm playing Heroes and I got all my keys mixed up or whatever, instead of feeling that way, I have this weird energy. I'm able to nail my stuff quicker. I'm Q-W-E-N-R like a madman. Like, something about that complements this game. And I don't really know how to put a finger on why, but they're really good companion games. Games that you could switch back and forth from to sort of, you know, shake things up and not get too stuck in one of them and not the other, and feel comfortable doing that.
The entire roster they could just put them all in Heroes and shut down Overwatch and they'd fit in great.
Well, that's the whole thing. So, John, let's throw it to you. Who do you, because I agree. I mean, you could take any of them, but who do you want to see after Tracer, or, you know, as close to that as possible?
So I would say right off the bat, my favorite hero in Overwatch is Pharah, but I don't necessarily, like, I think she could be a cool Heroes of the Storm character. She certainly has the abilities for it. She's kind of got a displacement grenade type ability like Morales. She's got rockets. She could fly up and do a big rocket barrage, and that would be a really cool thing to see in the game. But I think the character that would be most fun transitioning over into Heroes, I'd actually really like to see D.Va. I think there's some really cool stuff that they could do with her, specifically with her mech, her ability to maybe have, you know, sometimes be in the mech, sometimes be out of the mech, to use it as a giant bomb-like ultimate, you know, the ability to block incoming projectiles and how that would work, and would it work with melee? I just feel like there's a lot of really cool design possibilities around this notion of a hero that is in a big suit of armor that can defend people and put out some decent damage, and also have a state outside of the mech as well.
Yeah, she's pretty interesting. I mean, the possibilities are interesting. You could run the risk of, well, just a sustained strafed shooting is pretty much Tychus. So you wouldn't maybe want to rely on that as much. Maybe that's less of her point of existing.
What if you could do something, though, almost like with Misha and Rexar, but a little bit different, where what if you could actually pop out of the mech and deploy it as almost like a turret? And then you could be running around, and maybe she doesn't have a whole lot of abilities when she's on her own, but it allows her to move independently of the mech. So you've got this big mech in lane shooting at people, and she can go off and do an objective or do something else or put out different damage from a flank position or something like that.
Like the Batmobile.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great idea. Way to think of that. That's actually a really good way to compare it. And that's the nice thing about heroes is they don't have to live by the strict conventions of how they behave in Overwatch any more than, you know, Vala has to behave just like a Demon Hunter does in Diablo. They can play with that and mess with that and play with those expectations. So I think she'd be really good too. Bo, I want to hear yours, but before we do, I want to just say, if they don't figure out a way to get Junkrat in there, I'll be very sad. And I know that he's utilitarian in a lot of ways, the way Gazlo is, for example. And him just lobbing grenades is probably not the answer. I don't know what it is, but that concussive mine, his grenades combined with his trap, there's got to be something there with him. So for me, it's Junkrat. Bo, who do you want in there?
It's so hard to choose. They'd all fit in so well.
Yeah.
But I've been playing a ton of Symmetra. Mm. Symmetra wins games, and she's a lot of fun to play. In a way, she's like, and no offense, Symmetra, you're a great girl, but she's like the Gazlo of Overwatch.
Mm-hmm.
In that she does the turret thing, right? So you do the turret thing, you bait people into the turrets. Like, there's so many analogs for what's currently in Heroes there that it feels like, oh, they never make Symmetra for the game because it'd functionally be the same thing. So I don't know. Reaper, to me, is the most, I think, interesting character for Heroes.
Mm. Oh,
just because of his teleport and his necessity to be close. He's like an anti-tank hero.
Mm-hmm.
And like, we have a lot of heroes that are do good damage, but a hero that's specifically designed to destroy high health pools would be really interesting.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to go with Reaper, even though I like Symmetra the best.
Reaper would be pretty cool. And he's iconic. He's one of the you know, if you want to pick your top five iconic characters, it's Tracer, it's Reaper, it's Winston, who I'd love to see also, by the way.
Oh, Winston, so good.
Yeah, he's great. But you could take any of the top tier ones next and do them. But I'm with you guys. Could be any of them. You know, the only ones that maybe are a little redundant could be skins. I wouldn't mind. They're never going to do this, but a Tychus skin of what's her name, the Russian lady. Forgot her name now.
Oh, Zarya.
Zarya could be kind of cool. You know, there's ways to maybe play around with that some.
Yeah, you think about Torbjorn and you think, okay, well, how do you put in Torbjorn and differentiate him from Gazlo?
Right.
You know, they're definitely different. You can't say that they're the exact same analog or anything like that, but they're so similar in the things that they do that I'm curious how they would do it. But I'm also excited to see, like, I would love for them to say, hey, the next hero we're doing is Torbjorn, and have everybody say, well, he's just Gazlo with a beard, and have them come out and say, no, look, we're going to make a strong support class where maybe he's constantly giving armor or a shield of some kind to people, and the turret is there more as just a function of his damage while he's off doing other things.
Sure, like Rhaegar's totem or something that's just sort of doing a thing temporarily and isn't really as much of a factor as it would be in an Overwatch game. I mean, it could totally do that. Sure, de-emphasize that, re-emphasize his support abilities. I'm totally for that. And if they decide to skin it, here's what they do. You still have Gazlo, right? But on top of him is a big giant Torbjorn.
Instead of a robot, it's just Torbjorn riding on Gazlo's shoulder.
That's Robo Torbjorn.
That's an amazing idea. They should do that.
Okay.
Before the game, and just in closing, that game is really great. If you get a chance to play the beta, do not pass it up. When it comes out, do not think you're not going to play it and buy it, because you absolutely freaking will. It is.
It's really
something
good.
Special. It's really, really it's good. Really good. Yeah, it's you know, I mean, it is what it is in its own realm, but it's a special little realm, so play it. All right, we love Carbot animations. We want to mention this before we do calls today. John specifically put it in the notes, and it is pretty great. Do you want to explain it and tell people why it's a special one and why they should check it out? I will say this. The thing that jumped out at me that I liked the most about it is this wasn't one of those that's just like, let's play around with Raynor tropes or let's play around with one other guy's tropes. This is like everybody getting some screen time.
They called this one Team Battle, and it definitely focuses on the team fight aspect of the game in a lot of ways, and a lot of characters get some time to shine. Johanna, who hasn't been in any of their videos before, certainly gets some cool moments, but it really plays with a lot of the weird things that we actually see in Heroes of the Storm that we think about. You know, it addresses questions like, why does Johanna's blind work on Illidan? And, you know, stuff like that. So if you like Heroes of the Storm, I recommend checking it out because I thought this was the best one that they've done
it's
so far.
It's really, really great. Fun. Yeah, every trope is dead on. Let's just give them, well, I don't want to spoil it. Something happens in Mines, speaking of Mines, that is I've never thought about before. And now it makes no sense. So maybe that's why they pulled it. I don't know. But it's pretty incredible. So do check that out. You will not be disappointed. What else? Oh, I know. Let's do phone calls. 801-471-0462. Or you can email attachments and or emails to core@heroesforyou.com. We keep getting so many great calls that I've been remiss in adding too many emails, but I promise those are also good, and we'll get into more of those as time goes on. Let's start with a call about players.
So you guys were talking about this week about you don't think that there would be more than 5 players for any maps. I think that's horse bunch. I think making maps that require 7 players, 10 players, and even like 15 players will bring in more play for the support characters for Heroes of the Storm than what we currently see today in today's meta, etc. And I think it really opens up the door for more creativity for characters. Anyways, love the show. Chocolate.
I think people are under the impression, though, that the game, from an engineering standpoint, can handle more than 5-on-5. I'm not sure it can. Because if you're talking about, I don't know, 10v10 or 5v5v5, like a three-way, I think that's a big load. Like, that's a lot of stuff for both client and servers to keep track of, keep latency low. I don't know that
keep
the game's made for
data
it. Yeah, or any of that. Yeah, like, I don't know that the game is built for such expansion. I could be dead wrong and totally smoking the crack, but that feels that way to me.
The answer is we don't know. Yeah.
This guy has a good point, but let me point out some my thoughts on this, because there's strong opinions. Like, he's not wrong. Like, it could certainly make for some good gameplay and some fun elements and a lot of cool things. But we're not always talking about, with video game design, we're not always talking about what would be fun. It's not always a decision of, hey, wouldn't it be cool? And everybody's saying no. A lot of times we're talking about logistics and like what Scott just said with, is it even possible? But another element that they have to consider is, okay, let's say they do put in a map now that's 7v7. Do they just add that to the rotation? What happens when I want to queue with 7 of my buddies? Is that now the only map we ever get? Do 2 get kicked whenever we get a 5 map on the rotation? Like, there's logistical issues. Like, if they want to increase or decrease the number, it has to become a new game mode. And as soon as it becomes a new game mode, now you're talking about another place where you have to split your queue, and you have another area where people are queuing into. So we've already got Arena coming. That's already a different thing for people to queue into. Now they want to do a 7v7 map or something like that. That's a different queue at that point.
Yeah.
So they have to be very careful about how they approach this. And they've settled on 5v5 for now, and I think that's where most of the effort's going to go into. Again, that doesn't mean I disagree that, you know, I don't think it should ever be done or could ever be done. It just, they have to take a lot into consideration if they're going to do something like
but
that.
John, if we don't add 10v10 into the game, how are they ever going to develop a one hero controlled by 10 players? like, I want that. I don't want to feel negative about that. I think this guy brings up a good point.
Hadn't even thought about it.
It's like Seathun or Cthune or whatever.
Each person controls a tentacle that does something different.
Yeah. I this guy's head's the right. As customers, we don't know what goes on, so we just need to ask for what we want. But I think a lot of what you said makes sense. I mean, it's been years and they still haven't added more than 9 deck slots in Hearthstone. It must require a lot of engineering and logistics to add more if we can't even get more than 9 deck slots in that game. 11, 12 heroes and Heroes of the Storm, that's like way harder than deck slots.
Yeah. All right. I think that Blizzard will, well, listen, Arena came out of nowhere and seems crazy. That's them doing some of these things. That's them stretching some. But they're doing it within whatever confines they think still work for not splitting player bases or goofing the game up. I suspect you'll see more of that down the road, just like the Hearthstone team does and the WoW team. They all do this. Like, what is Archon mode in StarCraft 2? It's a weird freaking offshoot that works. And they thought a lot about that. And it took them 5 years to figure it out. And, you know, that's how they do it. So I suspect whatever they'll do, they'll take their time and not just go, wouldn't it be cool if it was 10v10? And then tomorrow we have it. It's never going to be like that.
But it wouldn't it be cool?
It would be great. It'd be amazing, even for 5 minutes. Internally, I bet they get to do weird stuff like that. But, you know, for us.
I'm okay with it. But yeah. I like 5v5.
For us, we have to wait and see.
Hi, Scott. Aiden here. My favorite character is Zeratul. Last week, you were talking about Dive Warriors. I just wanted to know if assassins could do the same thing. And if so, how should they? Thanks. Bye.
All right. I love this kid, first of all. Don't know him, but I can already tell he's my kind of kid. Zeratul is a cool character, and you have a rad accent, and it's a great question. So we always talk about dive tanks and dive comps, but there are plenty of characters who dive.
Well, yeah. I mean, if it's assassins you're looking at, Aiden, then it's... Then Kerrigan is what immediately jumps to my mind, and Illidan. Both of those characters love to get into the back line and dive. Where like they're out of range of the healers, and they're, you know, not where they're supposed to be. And their expectation is that their back line and their tanks are keeping up with them, because they can't kite or they can't be fancy like that, or else they risk losing. Like, they're all in, basically.
Sure.
So
I would even say Zeratul, I mean, I know he's not exactly a pure dive assassin, but he's pretty good at getting in there stealth, doing some damage, and then getting the crap out. That's a very divey kind of approach.
It's similar. He can complement a dive team. Mm-hmm. Although I'd argue that you'd rather somebody beefier like a Kerrigan or Sonya or even Artanis or Karazim. Like, he's good because he's melee and he can get in. He can close the gap quickly. That's really important. Is that the consistent thing with all these guys? They can close that gap. So, sure, Zeratul can be a part of it, but I think his more traditionally accepted role is one where you have a back line and a front line, and they're kiting a bit, and you're going in to target that squishy in the back line like a sniper. And I think the reason that he does that over Nova is because of that, what you described, Scott, his ability to go in, harass, mm-hmm. and if you can't get the kill, back out with Wormhole. Mm-hmm. He complements a dive team real well. So, you know, you're on the right track. Zeratul's a great character. So keep playing him.
Yeah. Dive, dive, dive. Also, John dives a lot with Jim from Utah, just nailing it with Karazim. Jump out.
I have no fear with Karazim.
Yeah. He is a weird, you get a weird sense of confidence with him. I do it as well when I play him. It's very strange because I guess it's just from experience with him, but he seems so wimpy. He's the one with the least amount of armor hanging off of him. He's just this little skinny dude, but he can get in there, get into that fray, do a bunch of crazy crap, and then get the hell out.
I don't remember who it was we were playing the other day, but I remember I was on Karazim and I was walking around and someone on our voice chat said, "Oh, hey, be careful. So-and-so's up there." And they named some hero. And I found him right as they were saying it. And I killed him. And I said, "That character has no concern for me."
Yeah, he's good. Ain't nothing wrong with that guy.
On episode 4, you all were talking about labels for different hero classes and stuff within Heroes of the Storm. And I wanted to call in to kind of throw my two cents in about what I think might be a better system. Blizzard should really just get out of the naming or the title for each class anyway. Just kind of get out of that business where they are not referring to any hero as a melee or a warrior or healer they should really just stop using those names and allow the community themselves to kind of create that. So maybe instead of you clicking over on Jaina and seeing that she is an assassin, you would still instead see stats as to how well she does at certain things in the game, as whether it's, you know, she has a high health bar or has a high damage output or has any healing, which she doesn't. But you would see those stats, and then those people who are trying to get a certain type of hero can go ahead and choose based on that rather than being pigeonholed into a support role if, you know, a hero can do one or the other. So let me all know what you all think. Bye.
So he's talking about, from what I can gather, he's saying, like, well, if you broke it down by percentage or... I don't know, you know, saying that Karazim is can go this much damage or this much healing. Do you think that would be helpful to players?
Overwatch does that. If you press the F1 button when you're in there, it mm-hmm. tells you like how amount of shields and health and like they're like ratings, right? And so
it's like those old Marvel trading cards. Do you remember those where you flip them over and on the back they'd have like power, intelligence, strength, and it'd be out of a scale of 10 or whatever?
Yeah,
absolutely. I remember that. They were great.
Yeah. It's the same idea. Maybe that's the answer. It does seem like that takes some thought. I mean, if you're just trying to jump in and you're in a draft and you got to hurry up and you got so many seconds to choose, maybe that's not the place for it unless you're, you know, completely as versed as possible in all of the characters. I know Blizzard errs on the side of let's make this simple or simple to understand, complex underneath, but easy to understand on the surface. And I'm pretty sure they think, by labeling things warrior, support, assassin, specialist, does that.
Well, here's something they could do. Well, hang on, but here's something. Like, they do this in Overwatch, but it's not in Heroes, which is blind pick, where it's like, you say play, I'll join a lobby. Like, I don't pick my hero in quick match. I join a lobby and everyone blind picks.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than just be like, well, I feel like playing Karazim today and get stuck on four support team versus all assassins or something, you know, you're in a, like, it's not draft, it's not ranked, it's just a queue where you log in and then boom, you have your hero selection screen, you get to see what everyone else is picking, like we do with the custom games, actually, when we were doing the Hero Pants tournament.
Yeah.
And everyone can see what everyone's picking, and at least that way, there's a little bit more of a conversation with other players about, you know, how the team's going to strategize their win, so.
Sure, you could still just be as picky as you were before. It's just that this way, there's a lot of last second changes you can make. Like, you know,
you could compare those stats he was talking about, which is like, oh, we don't have a, like the team tips in Overwatch. We don't have a tank. Oh, okay. Let's get a warrior.
I do like those tips. I don't know how, you know, they're not very granular. It's just like no support heroes or no defense heroes, even though you may have a very defense playing character who's normally considered offense. It's not accounting for that, so you don't have all the granularity you might want, but it's a pretty good little snapshot that you might need to tank, or you might be missing a piece of the pie here that would benefit your team. So more stuff like that, a little more fluid and less of a, we're way over here starting a room full of dudes and it's a mystery until we get in. Like, maybe they err on the side of that too much. Maybe that's a MOBA thing and they can't get around it. I don't know.
No, the MOBAs do that, so it's not.
To
get back a little bit to what he actually was suggesting it replace, though, like, I'm all for more information and I love stats and power rankings and all sorts of cool stuff like that. But, you know, I think the types, you know, when it comes to warrior, support, specialist, and assassin, I think there's a place for that in the game. And I don't think that should necessarily be dropped. And I used to be an adamant supporter of the idea that it did need to be expanded, and maybe it still does, but I'm actually falling away from that too. I feel like we are getting to a point now in the game where people are starting to understand what warrior is, and that it's a term that does not mean tanking, and it's a term that also does not mean brawler, and that we don't need to get into a place where we're trying to differentiate those. And same with support. Like, support doesn't mean healer. Like, people are starting to understand that more, more and more. And I don't know if they need to get rid of what's already there. I think it's a nice system for quests. I think it's a functional system. I think it's just taken us a while to wrap our heads around it to understand, okay, Sonya is not a bad character. She's not a great tank.
Yeah.
Like, that's what we're actually saying. That's the conversation we're actually having.
Yeah. And right now, she is killing it. This stat flattening crap has been to her advantage.
Oh, Sonya's so good.
Really
She's
good.
She's so good.
She's really good right now. So until they, I'm not that I'm smelling nerf or anything, but just early game, she is so much more of a pain in my butt.
And even when you kill somebody, you know what she says? Mm. She says, good riddance.
Oh, of course she does.
It's so great.
Well, she's got more tattoos than I'll ever even think of having. So that says something about her, I guess. I don't even know why I brought that up. All right, that's it for calls.
Those are some great calls.
Yeah, thank good you, calls, everyone. You guys. Always good. 801-471-0462. Email us, core@heroesforyou.com. And next week we'll get a bunch of... Actually, I'm not sure we're even doing a show next week because of the holiday. What are we doing? Are we doing it? We don't know yet. I guess keep track of us on Twitter and stuff. We'll let you guys know. We don't know what we're doing. Because there's family and people have things and, you know, it's Thanksgiving after all. Except in Canada. What do you guys do? Nothing?
We had it already.
Yeah,
you
but
guys
what,
are late.
I had a Canadian Thanksgiving in October. It was fantastic.
Yeah, it's true.
But
what did you have, Putin?
But yeah, no, we had, actually it was mostly traditional American stuff. But they had this weird German cheese that I didn't like very much, which had nothing to do with Canada. But do you guys do anything on the American Thanksgiving holiday? Just laugh at us and think we're weird or...
Nope, we go to work.
All right.
You go like to work. It's Monday.
You get the job done. I understand. Fair enough. Yeah. But there'll be more soon. Also, we'd love to get some games with you. There's always community playing. Join us at the Frog Pants channel in the chat in the game. Just type /join /frogpants. That's it. Space being a space, not spelled out space. You know what I mean?
/frogpants.
Yeah, not
space. Regular frog pants.
Space frog pants. So come play with us, play a little Overwatch, play a little of that, play whatever you're into. Heroesforyou.com is the website, and you can find us all on Twitter. Bo Schwartz, Scott Johnson, and John_Jagger. That's John with the J-O-N, no H. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Bo, for John. We'll see you next time. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.